Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rahalastapa Book Club. I am delighted and honoured and amazed to be joined by the fantastic Stephen Wright, who's written a brilliant novel called Harold. Stephen Wright, the American comedian, not any of the UK Stephen Wrights, one of whom we really don't want to mention at all. But how are you, Stephen?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, I'm really good. And I'm very, very pleased to see you. A massive fan. And I just looked at your Wikipedia page and realised you've got pretty close to having an EGOT. You've got two of the EGOTs and nearly got the G of the EGOT. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate because I'm just making stuff up.
Well, I mean, what I love about this, I mean, I love this book. I think it's.
Oh, thanks.
I think it's. There's so much in it. I think you have to probably read it 5 or 6 times before you get everything you're going to get out of it, and then there'll still be more in there. But it's a real dive into, I guess, partly your mind, the mind of someone who thinks a lot and who has unusual thoughts. And I'm guessing Harold is at least partly you inside the body of a 7-year-old boy?
Oh, yeah, it's mainly me. I mean, I didn't think of, like, how would a 7-year-old look at this or anything like that. I was using his head, Harold's head. I was pouring into his head what I thought about life in general.
Yeah.
Because I have things in my, you know, I do stand-up, and the jokes are very short, couple-sentence jokes. And it's a very specific, you know, to make an audience laugh out loud is a very narrow window to have people have a physical reaction like that. But I have a lot of things in my head that wouldn't go through a stand-up window, at least the window that I do. So I got to use, when I started writing it, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to pour everything that I think about that couldn't be on stage in through his head.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, it works. But I think it is like a 7-year-old. I've got an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they both think in the same sort of ways, or at least the world is so confusing, and to when you only have partial information, that you do have sort of profound and amazing thoughts. But it's more than. I mean, it's such an involved novel because it is, you know, it's anachronistic. It's not trying to be realistic, and it's all basically set inside someone's head rather than any adventures happening or any plot outside of that head. But that's, you know, but it shows that the imagination and the thoughts and what we project outwardly into the world and the things that we keep hidden inside us are sort of much more interesting than you know, going on a massive caper and things happening to you. The inside of someone's head is, you know, is this sort of infinite universe in itself. And I would imagine, especially your head, where the thought process is, I think, slightly different to most people's. Thank goodness, Stephen, because this is where I think your comedy and your philosophy comes from.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's like, I think everyone's mind is like a fingerprint. You know, you have your own brain, how everyone's mind works. And everyone's head is not like Harold's head, but everyone's head is like a mat. It's almost good that God made it like, if like I say in the book, if there is a God, that you don't know. I mean, you're walking down the street and you just pass someone and they're walking the other way and it's, you might not even acknowledge them. But there's a Times Square and everyone, a Times Square with a tornado happening. And everybody's head is just madness. But you don't know because you don't hear what's in someone's head.
Yeah. So it is like, it's fascinating to do that. But I think it's fascinating. I mean, I love your comedy, and it's a kind of comedy that I'm not good at. My stuff's more long form. If I write a one-liner joke a year, I'm very, very happy. And your one-liner jokes seem to come thick and fast, even within this novel, which is not a comedy novel per se, but it is very funny. And it is those sort of... It's about the connections that made in your brain. What the sort of central idea is that there's a sort of rectangular window in Harold's brain, and every thought is a different bird flying in into the window, sort of... flying through and then sometimes projecting into other ideas, sometimes flying straight out again, I guess.
See, when I started writing it, all these things came into my mind that I had thought of over the years that had nothing to do with this book. And then I thought, I could just put that here. Oh, I could just put that. But the rectangle and the birds in my head, years ago, like 8 years ago, I thought, just to amuse myself as an analogy, not to say it on stage or ever even use it, was like, what if your head was a tiny sky and there's thousands of birds and each bird represented a certain thought? And then there's a little tiny rectangle in the middle of your brain, like a window frame, a picture frame, empty. And the birds are flying around. And if one goes through that frame, then that's what you would think of consciously. Because you're walking down the street and you're thinking, oh, I got to go to this meeting. And then you, all of a sudden you'll be wondering, I wonder how tall Lincoln was when he died. So then I had that to amuse myself just years ago. And then when I started writing Harold, I thought, oh, I'll have his brain work like this and it. And then I realized then it enabled me to change the subject constantly. Like using the birds through the window as a logical excuse.
Yeah. Well, no, it works brilliantly. It also reminded me, I thought it was from Beowulf. I don't know much about Anglo-Saxon English, but then I realized it's from the Venerable Bede. There's a bit where they talk about life being like a sparrow flying through a mead hall, that it's darkness, and then the sparrow's in light as it flies through, and then it's into darkness as it goes out the other side of the hall. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No, I didn't know that
image. And so it's really reminiscent of that Anglo-Saxon idea, which I don't know exactly who came up with that or where it came from, but that always stuck with me because that is such a, you know, the vividness and the colour of being suddenly somewhere and then being nowhere to begin with, being nowhere and then being in life, which is sort of what this... It's a celebration of thought. It's a celebration of life and of experience and philosophy. I mean, I've seen this in a lot of the reviews, but it very much reminded me of Kurt Vonnegut, who's one of my absolute favorite novelists.
Oh, yeah.
Partly because it's, you know, because of that, the nature of it is It's jumping around and it's skittish, but equally, like him, this book is full of ideas. Like, most books have an idea and then they spend 300 pages examining one idea. And this has an idea that could be, and I think Vonnegut did this as well. There's so many things in Vonnegut where he writes, that Kilgore Trout had written a novel called this about this. And you're going to go, you could have written that novel. And you've just thrown it away. And there's so many things in this book that could have been books on their own, because it's just full of ideas.
You know, I am blown away that it's been saying it's similar to Vonnegut, because he's one of my total heroes of all creative people. I mean, including music, filmmakers, he's on my Mount Rushmore of people. And it's just amazing to me. And it is so dense. There's so many thoughts. A couple of my friends said they had to read it in sections. They couldn't just keep flip like it was normal. And a lot of people told me they're going to have to read it again and again, because it's like uncut cocaine. It's just, it's just like, oh my God.
Well, it's dense, but then also, I'm sure this will be the case of most people as well. But again, having a mind that is creative and similarly, like, slightly butterfly, I listen to the audiobook and, an idea will come up and your own brain goes off thinking of extrapolating that idea into, and then you come back into the audiobook and go, oh God, I've missed a couple of pages. You either need to rewind or go, okay, I'll get that on the second. And it doesn't matter, because, not to say that I want people skipping bits of it, but it doesn't matter, because there is so much there, and it's not a linear thing. It's this compound thing. Yeah, I think you can't go at it. It's not, you're not going to sit in bed and read this all in one night and unable to put it down. You'll sort of want to put it down so you can have a think, I think, about some of the stuff.
Yes, there's so much to process. And it's not a linear thing. And when I first started writing it, I showed it to a friend of mine. And he said, you can't do this. You can't, I showed him like 3 pages. This has no story. This just can't keep going like this. And I thought, oh, I guess he's right. So I stopped writing it. And then a little while later, I thought, I don't care. I'm not a story guy. I can't make stories up. I'm just going to see how long it can possibly go. And when getting back to yours, you have children and a 7 or an 8, did you say?
I've got a 5-year-old and 8-year-old, yeah.
They're automatic. I mean, imagine kids are like, they came down on a spaceship. They don't even know the language. They don't know anything. They're trying to learn how to walk. They're trying to learn how to talk. I mean, if we went to another planet, we would already know how to talk and walk. But they came here. They don't even know any. The point is, they're completely, constantly curious, like little scientists.
Yeah.
Everything is complete. And that part of my mind never really wore off. I think all artists, you all the material people come up with is from noticing things. I think art creative people just notice the hell out of stuff. Like the kids, not as much as the kids, because they're just such in a unique place. But it's all from noticing the world.
Yeah, and being able to different, to not accept, I suppose, that life is normal, and then still being able to go, this is crazy. Why is it? I mean, there's so many bits you could pick from this book. I started, in fact, I was reading it on a Kindle to begin with, then I listened to the audiobook. And I started just clipping, doing clips of the bits that I thought were interesting. And I thought, I'm just clipping everything. I've got to stop clipping. One of the early bits was, why don't you ever see any statues of, you see boys, statues of boys weeing and pissing, but you never see statues of girls pissing.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that I suppose the comedic and the artistic mind will keep on noticing stuff that within life that is just that's strange or wrong or. I love the bit about, loads of bits stuck with me. I love the bit about you're talking about the Big Bang and the light from the Big Bang taking a certain amount of time to get here, so that the sound from the Big Bang, because the speed of sound slower, that we're going to get hit by the sound from the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Which is just like, and it sort of makes sense, and because we haven't got we can't see the beginning of the universe yet, so it will happen at some point.
Yeah, it'll sound like one continuous nuclear explosion for 800,000 years.
So it's all this scientific knowledge in there. And I think we're also, as well as being fantastic at making those connections and spotting the weirdness of the world, there's a lot of sort of magpie picking up interesting facts. You've got the grandfather who's quotes wisdom from the Lakota Native Americans, and just lots of little facts that you've obviously picked up along the way that you want to share as well. But those are all fascinating as well. And I would say that you say there's not a story in there, but there is a story in there. But you, as a reader, have to kind of assemble it yourself, because it's about this boy who has a relationship with his teacher, he has a relationship with his mother. He sort of doesn't really mention his father as much as I remember. So there's a relationship with his father, even by it not being mentioned. There's something, you know, that you can start piecing together what's going on in this boy's life and what's caused him to be the way he is, and whether his mother's influence has caused various things. So there is a story there, and also, you know, there doesn't need to be a story there, because it's something else. I sort of think, as a, you know, as a comedian, I've written things, and you've tried to write more serious things, and you often get judged as a comedian, right? Which I'm sure will be happening to you, that people say, oh, Stephen writes, just tried to do what he does in his stand-up and put it in a novel. But it's not that at all. And I feel if you weren't known as a comedian and this book came out and the right people saw it, they'd go, this is an incredible, unique work of literature. But I think it's, do you find that because of those preconceptions, do you feel that they might not notice that?
Notice what?
Well, is the preconception that because you're a comedian, this is just a comedian writing a book, or are people noting its literary merit? Because I think it does have.
They think because they're known for the jokes that it was going to be a book of material, little jokes, and then they start reading it and it's not. There are jokes. I mean, it couldn't help. I was writing it, and then something would come into my mind. I go, oh, I'll just put that right in here. But there's not a ton of jokes. But it's different. It's a different way of writing, because it's not jokes. And I really didn't. The beauty of it is I didn't question what I was doing. I had no book contract. I had no thing with a publisher. I was just writing it to almost amuse myself. And I saw this TED Talks thing about writing, and it was like a 18-minute thing. This Asian guy, all subtitles. His name I can't remember right now, but it really affected me, because I looked that up when I started writing this, and one of the things he was saying was he teaches writing, and he has written six novels, was to not over-examine what you're writing. Don't judge it so much that you get frozen.
Yeah.
Like, don't think, what are people going to think of this? Should I do this? I don't know if this will be accepted. I don't know. And he said, just to write without that, just have fun with it. And I heard that guy, and I was like, this is amazing. So, I mean, I get coffee is in the book. Do you drink coffee?
I do drink coffee, and I appreciate you thanked coffee at the end.
In the acknowledgements, coffee. Because I have a good imagination, but when I drink coffee, my mind goes insane, like I'm on drugs.
Yeah.
So I would time my coffee with trying to write a couple hundred words a day, and thinking of what that guy said that I just told you. So I was just making stuff up like a kid finger painting. It helped me, because I wasn't overthinking it. I was just trying to amuse myself, because a lot of creative people, and in fact myself, if I examine it too much, you can't do anything. You can't do anything if you're judging the hell out of it, and you're not even started yet. So it was people think, oh, you wrote this book. It is a good accomplishment. It is a really good accomplishment. But I had fun the whole way. It was really fun.
Yeah, and I think that's what I love about it is it's not bound by the rules of the books, but of novels. That it, you know, that part of it is this is the thoughts inside the boy and the boy inside the man who's written it. That it's sort of like a 67-year-old man inside a 7-year-old boy, and that you step outside. I just love the bit where you notice some things anachronistic, and I don't know whether you notice later or at the time, but you just say in case you're wondering about that, about this thing being from a different time zone, mind your own business.
Oh, yeah.
I love writing that to the reader, but because, you know, there's an artifice to it and there's a reality to it, and so you believe in the characters and you believe in Harold, but equally you know he's not thinking things that a set of seven, not all the things would be thought by a 7-year-old, and it doesn't matter because it turns into this sort of trippy coffee. I mean, it's nice that it's a trip on coffee. I'm the same with chocolate buttons. If I eat chocolate buttons, I go off my nut for about half an hour.
What's a chocolate button?
It's just like chocolate, a little chocolate disc that you can.
Jazzes your mind up.
Yeah, yeah. I've never really taken drugs, but that does it for me. And coffee to an extent. Coffee wakes me up, which is important. Yes, in terms of creating stuff.
But you're saying the 7-year-old wouldn't. That's another thing I didn't care about. I know a 7-year-old wouldn't think of this stuff. Someone left a comment on one of the social medias saying a 7-year-old would never think of this. And I was like, okay. Are you bothered by the flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz? I mean, I didn't care. Like a lot of the 60s things, that something that happens in the song Helter Skelter is like in 68, but the book is taking place in 63. I didn't care. I was rounding off time.
Yeah.
And that thing you pointed out was the picture of the Earth taken from the Voyager 2 that was taken in 1992, I think, or 91. And I looked it up. When was this picture taken? And they said, oh, my God, 91. And I thought, all right, I'll just put in, if you're wondering why, there's a mind your own business. You know, like almost like a junior high. You would think that in junior high, I'll put this in. But then you won't really put it in the real book.
Yeah.
You know, you won't really. But then part of me thought, I don't care. Just put it in. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that's what I mean. It's sort of more sprawling than, you know, than reality or logic. And it's still about you. It's still about your brain, even if you're not a character, and even if you're, you know, the author is present. Mm-hmm. around the, yeah. It's sort of like it's like a universe with a god, if there is a god, sort of at the edges of it. You know, I love it. I love that sort of the confusion and it's like you say, it's not a tricky read. It's a very enjoyable read, and the things will make you think. But it is that density of ideas that I think makes it very very exciting and very enjoyable.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I did listen to the audiobook. There's one point, I mean, it's all delivered in your inimitable style. And I don't know if this is left in on purpose. There's one bit where you make a mistake and laugh, and it's quite nice, and it's still in the audiobook.
Yeah. We were recording it. You know, it took like 5 different sessions to record it, and I made mistakes all the way through. And then one time, I made a mistake, and I said to them, "I said we should leave one of the mistakes in just for the hell of it." And they thought, "Oh yeah, okay, yeah." And then they did, and that's another thing that's involved in the not putting a lot of pressure on it. You know, if it was very restrained, here's the audio book. You can't have a mistake where the guy's laughing. You can't have that. But it was like, okay, and you're pointing it out. You got a kick out of that.
I really got a kick out of it. It's nice because it's also nice to hear, you know, because it is, it's delivered in the way you deliver stuff, and it's just lovely to hear you laugh anyway. You know, it's just nice to know that you are enjoying yourself. Because your style is so like, oh, you know, I've just got out of bed and I don't want to do this. So it's nice to know that you were really enjoying it. But yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think sometimes with a book, something will take you outside of the book and it isn't good. But I think the things that take you outside of this book take you to more interesting places, or as interesting places as the book. So it's kind of really unique I'm right in thinking you started writing on Twitter before anything else. Was it just you? Is that that's what I've read? Did you start the process on Twitter?
Yes, I wrote a story for Rolling Stone magazine in like 1988. It was a fairy tale about how the beach was invented. It was like a few pages, and every 5 years I would read it, and I would think I should write another story, but then I never would. Then I did read it like 7 years ago, and I thought, no, 10 years ago I read that story. And then right then they got me a Twitter thing, and I thought, well, I don't want to put jokes on Twitter, because to me jokes are an alive thing involved with the audience, to hear and say it in front of an audience. I didn't want to just put joke. So I thought, I know, I'll just start writing something else influenced by the beach story. I'll just write something else. So I started writing Harold on Twitter, and I did it just for a few weeks and then stopped in a few weeks. Then I stopped doing it on that. And then I thought, you know what? I'm just going to see if I can write this without Twitter involved. I'm going to see if I can write a whole story, see how long it could go. Another thing is I wrote it on my phone.
That's right.
I wrote the whole book on my phone because I could be anywhere. I mean, I could never, I'm very influenced by the environment I'm in. You know, I couldn't sit in a room. I could never think of all that stuff sitting in a room at a computer. So I would be at the beach. I would be in Telluride, Colorado, at the top of a mountain. It didn't matter. I'd be in the airport. And then I would send it to this computer guy I knew, and he would put it in so that eventually it would be able to be sent to people. But the freedom of the phone is incredible. The timing of the phone is the smartphone is amazing for me, because I'm such a I'm a lazy, not lazy. I can't be made to sit, go over there and do that. I mean, to have the technology, we were talking when this started about how the technology is amazing. We're all, 3 of us are in 3 different countries, but to be able to, the freedom of just banging that right in, it's incredible.
Yes, yeah, it really is. And was it an easy book to get published? I can imagine. I mean, obviously you're a big name, and so maybe publishers want to publish everything you do. But equally, it might not, like you say, it might not be what they would be expecting from Stephen Wright.
Well, what happened was I was writing it for 2 years, and then Simon & Schuster happened to contact my manager saying, we noticed that he never wrote a book. Would he be interested in writing a book? But they didn't know I was already writing it for no reason for 2 years. And I said, oh, I'll go in and talk to them sometime. Yes. So I waited another year. I kept writing it. And then I went in and met them, and I told them, the kid, he's in school, it's all what it happens in his head the whole day in one click, you know. Oh, that's very interesting. Oh, okay. Everything is in his head. It's one day in class.
Yeah.
And they said, we were very interested in that. Bring it in when you're done. They had no timeline. I had no money thing. It was like, it was like a kid coloring on the walls. And just bring it. And I'd go in a year later. No, I'm not done yet. Then a year later, you're done. No, I'm not done. I would just check in with them when I would be in New York. I don't live in New York. I live in Massachusetts. And then finally, last summer, I said, okay, I think this is it. So I got lucky that I was writing it anyway. And then they were wondering if I had wanted to write something.
Sure. So that's great. And was there an editing process? I can't imagine you're very easy to edit. Did someone come in and edit it and give you ideas? Or did they just go, fine, we'll take your phone and we'll put this in.
We'll take your phone. We'll send your phone to the factory. And the phone starts coming out as pages. No, there was an editor, Sean Manning. He really helped me a lot. He read the whole thing. He had lots of notes about it. And some of them I agreed. Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh, yes, I agreed. And other things I didn't agree. And they didn't say you have to do anything about changes. They left it up to me. But some things he did, I love the guy, but some of the things he didn't understand comically, like why. And I thought, well, I know more comedically than him, you know, but when he was reading it, he did realize after a certain amount that it wasn't following the pattern of books.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't send him pages or anything. I just sent the whole thing at once. And he's reading it in the publishing world, and he was disturbed, and he didn't know why he was disturbed. And then he told me he was disturbed because it wasn't following the structure of what's. And then he realized, this is not going to follow the structure. This is not. Oh, okay. And then the pressure was off him, and then he could just read it and enjoy all the madness.
Yeah.
He was very supportive.
Yeah, well, it's good to have that. And I think everyone, as long as you can find the right editor, and sometimes an editor can just come in and, you know, I had a great editor for one of my books years ago, and he basically just, he was pretty hands-off, but he just sort of threw in like four or five really good points that you go, oh, this has instantly changed this into something, you know, much better.
Yeah.
Than and some people will go through and have lots of ideas. But yeah, I think that's it. When you've got, especially with comedy, when you've got somebody who understands comedy, it's unlikely the editor of your book is going to be as anywhere near as good as a comedian as you are. So, and I think they would have to acknowledge that. So, yeah. Is this something you're going to carry on with, or is stand-up still your sort of first love, or is it?
I'm still mainly doing the stand-up, even though right now I'm taking a break from it, but this has jazzed me up. Like, it's like, okay, I can get a whole more out of my mind without it being stand-up. It's not that I don't like doing stand-up, it's like it's just another way to, I mean, all the creativity is from the same part of your brain. You know, if you're doing a painting or you're fooling around with music, it's all from the same part. And it was just like, I liked doing it. I had fun doing it. And I think I want to do more of it, and keep doing the stand up.
And I'm coming up to 56, and I'm sort of getting back on the road again after having a few years off. I'm finding it quite tiring doing stand up. Maybe it's because I've got young kids as well, which doesn't help. How is it doing stand up as you're sort of in your late 60s now?
It's the intensity. One reason I'm taking a break is the intensity. I don't know about you, but it's very intense being in front of the audience. I mean, it looks like you're just walking around saying, it's like walking a tightrope.
Yeah.
And that, I've been doing it for 40 something years, and that intensity is starting to bother me. It's like, wait a minute, I don't know if I want to do this as much anymore, because it's just so, you know, and getting older, you just change when you're older. That's why they have the pilots of F-16s that are landing jets on aircraft carriers. They're 19 years old. Yeah. 60-year-old guy's not landing a jet with a rain. You know, and he knows how this is insane. This is crazy. But when you're young, it's like, okay, let's go. Let's rain and let's do it again. But honestly, and the travel. I don't know. About,
it's the travel. It's nothing compared to America. My travel is like within the UK usually. But yeah, the American travel, I can imagine, is very debilitating.
You change when you get older, but yeah. Your mind doesn't change. The creative machine in your head is not changing.
No.
You know, don't you find that your brain's not stopping? If they said to you, you can't think of anything funny anymore, you would be arrested. You can't stop it, don't you think?
I think that is true. Yeah, and I still love comedy, and some comedians go on for a long time and start to sort of hate comedy, but I still love it, and I still love finding new things, and I still enjoy other people, I think, which is the important thing. You know, some comedians start to just get annoyed about other comedians, but I still enjoy most comedians, certainly the really good ones.
I do too.
And that's what that goes back to. You know, it's nice to see a comedian who, you know, you can't with you. I look at your stuff and I go, I can't work out how you did that. And I can't work out how you thought that. Some comedians I can work out how they did everything. And it's nice to see someone who enjoy someone who's got a sort of different skill set to you. But the with your jokes, the brevity and the sort of those ideas and the way they collide is, you know, only you could. Do it, and that's sort of the mark of a great comedian, I think. But yeah, it's good. But this is what the book is about, isn't it? It's about the mind, and it's sort of about whether we leave that child behind as we get older, and whether it's right or wrong to still be questioning and thinking about everything. I mean, you say there's the purpose of life is to enjoy your life is one of the statements.
Yes,
so
A friend of mine, a guy who's like 30 years older than me, no, 25 years old, he told me that like 20 years ago. And I thought, oh my God, that is so simple. And it's so like, oh my God, it takes almost the whole pressure off because nobody knows really why we're here, what the hell is. And he boiled it down to just enjoy it. Yeah. That's one of the only real, no, there's many real things, but Peter Vasselli, he told me that.
That's good. Well, you know, it is the book's full of wisdom, full of ideas. You know, some of them, you know, comedic, some of them philosophical, some of them true, some of them crazy, some of them just putting stuff out there. You know, I mean, I think that's the joy of being a comedian is, and I think there's a bit, isn't it, where you say this of Harold, it's being able to ask the questions without having to provide the answers. There is a bit where you say something along those lines. So you're clever enough to ask the questions, but not clever enough to provide the answers, which is sort of the comedian's job, which is a nice place to be. So it's an easier place to enjoy it. I'm glad you're still enjoying it and getting out there, but I do hear what you're saying and I do agree with you about the travel and the, it's a physical toll, and it is the tiredness is what surprises me. And when I look back at, you know, I've been keeping a sort of blog for 20 years now, and you look back at your 30s and, you know, you see how much you got done in the day. And someone sent me a blog entry from 20 years ago, and I did so many things in this day, and I was hungover at the start of the day, and I got drunk at the end of the day, and I got off with someone at the end of the day, which isn't even in the blog. And I did, you know, and I did 4 or 5 things, and they go, how did I?
How did I keep
up with that? Whereas now it's, you know, it's a different story. But yeah, it's difficult to keep up that momentum. But it's I really, really recommend this book. And again, audiobook is a great way to enjoy it. But I think I've also ordered the physical book because I think it is something that you want to mull over. And the audiobook will, I think you'll have to keep stopping and rewinding or just stopping and thinking. So it'd be nice to have it written down as well. And the book's beautiful. I'd say the cover of the book is.
Oh yeah. Is the guy did an amazing job. I was just stunned when they showed me that. I mean, I told him I'm into surrealism, and he read the book. So obviously the cover was influenced by it, But I said to him, even if it wasn't the cover of a book, even if it was a painting without Harold, without my name, just a painting, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a lovely thing to have, and really congratulations on it, Stephen. Not that I'm surprised, because I, as I say, I'm a huge fan, but it is also great to you know, do something that is surprising and different, and that's part of creativity, and not be pigeonholed, which you never would be anyway, but to be able to do something like this. And I do hope you do more, because you know that Kurt Vonnegut can't write any more books, so I'm very happy for you to take over from Kurt Vonnegut, because I've read all of his stuff and much. But again, with him, you can go back and, you know, you read, his books are so dense that you go back and you sort of almost forget what happened in any of them, because there's so much going on.
Yeah, what a mind, unbelievable mind, that guy, man.
And funny as well, which again, most authors, he's not a comedian, but he's as funny as a comedian.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's pretty rare with a novelist, whereas you're as funny as a comedian because you are a comedian. So that's very good. I do ask everyone, are you a big reader outside of Vonnegut? Is there anything you've been reading recently?
I'm not a big reader, really. I mean, Vonnegut and Charles Bukowski and John Irving. Yeah. My main guys. I got to meet Vonnegut though several times. Yes, and it was like in awe. I was in awe, and he was so like casual, nice guy. Like, but you could tell that, you know, he had 15 brains. You know, he just so for me it was a big. Absolutely, one of the highlights of meeting people in this business was to meet him.
Oh my goodness, incredible! I'd love to. He was a big fan of stand-up comedy, I think, as well, wasn't he? Just sort of mentioned stand-up comedian. So that must be nice to know that he knew you and obviously knew your stuff. That's astonishing.
Excellent.
Oh, terrific. Look, Stephen, I really appreciate your time. Sorry, we had a few technical problems at the beginning, but we sorted it out. Hopefully, it's worked. I would just recommend everyone to go out and buy Harold in whichever form you like, and you will definitely you'll get a lot out of it, and you'll be thinking about it for a lot. And I think, you know, if you're a comedian as well, I think it's one of those things that sparks off other ideas, which I really, you know, if you read a book and then, you know, it made me, and I don't think you even wrote about this, but it made me start thinking about prehistoric man. And I think maybe out of that idea of the idea of enjoying yourself and thinking how much of humanity must have just got through life, and for them to imagine where we'd got to, and those guys just banging rocks together for thousands and thousands of years. If they knew where humanity was going, I don't know whether they'd be happy or sad, or I mean, it'd be too much for them to cope with, but we needed to have them do that to get to where we are. Our bit's better than their bit is my feeling, but maybe I'm wrong about it. But yeah, so it will really just, you know, it's nice as a creative person to read something that I guess is that makes you happy to be a creative person and is inspiring without wanting to copy it. You know, it's so much your own thing. As I say, I think that's, you know, your line. I've heard other people try to do your lines, and it doesn't work, because it's sort of, you're so much a part of your jokes that someone else doing them, you know, they're still good lines, but it doesn't work in the same way.
but are you telling me that this jazzed you, like made you jazz your creativity? That's such a compliment to me. I mean, I didn't think of that when I'm writing it, but to have you, this like causing other connections in your own mind, that's great. Thank you for telling me that.
No, well, it's you know, because it's thinking about thought, and it's, you know, that's what the job of comedian, it does. I think if you're interested in how comedians' brains work, and if you're interested in how an extraordinary comedian's brain works, this will give you a little window into it. A little window with a bird flying into it, but yeah, it's you know, yeah, it definitely. If I'm hoping that other writers are listening to this podcast and, you know, want for inspiration, then this book will definitely inspire you. And I think what you're saying as well, just going out and doing the thing you want to do, I think that's very inspiring. And not worrying if people are saying this isn't what books are meant to be. I mean, the problem is, Stephen, half the time if someone says that, it means you're doing well, and half the time you're doing very, very badly. So, you know, this isn't what books are meant to be. But we'll see. But no, thank you so much for joining me. It's a proper honour. Thank you to Chris Evans for sorting out all the technical stuff for us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Richard. Thank you. I really enjoyed speaking to you. I hope to meet you sometime.
I really hope so.
Thanks for having me on your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.